Tell me first what MicroPact does for federal customers.
MicroPact is the leading provider of case and business process management for the federal government. Our flagship product, IntelliTract, is the most widely used BPM product within the federal government. There's no other BPM solution or BPM provider that has the implementations that we have. We have over 250 government customers using our systems, and we have prime contracts with virtually every cabinet-level agency.
So you are elbow deep in helping agencies transition from legacy systems to what you have with them. When they come to you and they say, here's what we've got, typically, what has their evaluation system been? I know you can't, everybody's different, but normally, where are these agencies in the evaluation process able to show you what they have and what they want to move to?
Well, agencies are always looking for what's going to give me the biggest bang for my buck in terms of what is going to allow me to automate what things are going to allow me to automate things much more efficiently. So really, that's the process that agencies are looking at.
Is there still a lot of low-hanging fruit out there for automation? Are there still a lot of processes that agencies can do?
Francis, you'd be surprised. I'm actually floored sometimes when I see some of the agencies and what types of applications they're using these days. I mean, Excel is very, very prevalent still in the federal government. Manual process is very, very prevalent. And you know, in this day and age, it's just really surprising that that's still very much a big part of our federal government.
Why is Excel surprising? Just because there are more sophisticated tools out there?
Absolutely. In this day and age, collaboration is a big, big thing. And you can't collaborate with Excel. Frankly, you have one person working on that spreadsheet and that's it. So collaboration is key in the federal government, especially since 9/11, where data needs to be shared amongst government agencies. It's just become the norm to have that.
Are you getting a sense that agencies are getting more comfortable with customizing solutions off the shelf to their individual needs rather than starting from scratch? I mean, you have your product, and I imagine that's the business that you're primarily in, is let's show you how we can make this work for your solution.
Definitely. I mean, agencies these days, especially with technology advancing so much, technology like BPM that we sell is very prevalent now. It's becoming mainstream in the federal space. It's mainstream in the commercial space, and it's now coming into the government space. And really, the reason is because, you know, you no longer have to have, 2-year projects or 3-year projects with throwing a ton of money at it. You can really start off really small. See and identify the problems you're having. You could even model your existing process and then refine it as time goes on. Because of the ease of being able to configure that software much more quickly than custom programming, agencies are just adopting this technology very quickly now.
Do you get a lot of agencies asking you where else in government has this worked? I'm starting to hear that's one of the top questions for vendors is, tell me where somebody else has done this. I imagine it's just strictly a risk mitigation effort.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the great things, and that we've been fortunate enough to be able to have so many customers being able to utilize our software product to automate many of their business needs. So agencies are always looking to see, okay, what did this agency do and how did you do it? They're looking for best practices because, frankly, they can't make any more mistakes. You know, the budgets aren't there anymore. These projects have to be successful.
The problem with that, though, is there's also a focus on innovation. And innovation, by its definition, is something new and fresh and maybe not always tried and true. So what kind of a juxtaposition are you seeing when it comes to innovation, and yet we want best practices, something that has really been vetted and really tested?
Sure. Innovation is just happening so quickly, especially in the IT world. I mean, technology changes, every week, it seems sometimes. So infusing information technology into what they're trying to accomplish really is allowing agencies to take a step back and say, okay, is this technology really going to do what it says it's going to do? So I think, innovation is certainly important for federal agencies to take a look at. But at the end of the day, infusing that IT, technology into the organization is what's important.
When an agency says we want an innovative solution, do you get a sense, or do you get an explicit description of how they want that to look? Now, obviously, they're not going to tell you we want it to do this or that, or it wouldn't be innovative. It would just be a request for proposal. But do you get a sense that they have an idea, at least, of a direction that they want to head in? Or is that still rather ambiguous? A lot of folks said that the concept of innovation was ambiguous to agencies for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, what we found, actually, you know, the product, the way we sort of structure our products is to listen to our customers. Our customers are the ones that have the business need. They're the ones that have the problems, and when we're here to help them solve that problem. So whenever we talk to our customers, that's what we want to know. What is it that we need to add to our product that will allow you to help your job easier? You know, what's going to make your job easier? And so that's what we get from agencies these days.
The connection between the end user and the acquisition shop at the agencies. Are you seeing a better, stronger connection than we've seen in the past for them to be able to tell you, this is what my end user wants, this is what I need? Or are you seeing the end user more involved up front in the process than before?
Well, that's the one thing that we do at MicroPact. You know, we provide user forums. I mean, that's the basis of how we get this feedback from our customers. You know, we gather all the agencies together on kind of like an industry day, maybe 1 or 2 days, listen to the feedback they have, because we always solicit it throughout the whole process. And then from there, we're able to take it to our product development group, and they're able to implement it.
The whole concept of the communications process between vendors and agencies has been kind of, it's been under the microscope for the past, I guess, 6 months or so since MythBusters first came out. Are you seeing a lot of improvement when it comes to that conversation that should be going on between industry and government?
I think there's still a lot of restrictions when it comes to that these days, you know, and I think it's important that relationship gets stronger. That's the only way you're really going to know if you're going to be able to solve the problems of the federal government or the customer that you're trying to service. So unless you hear from them directly, it's just a shot in the dark, you know, and some of the RFP requirements that are out there are very stringent. So, yes, they may write on a piece of paper that this is what they want, but at the end of the day, without seeing it and without being able to touch and feel it, it's very difficult for them to realize, okay, yeah, maybe I don't really want what I wrote in this RFP. Maybe I want it a little bit differently, you know? And that's the power of BPM, you know? BPM software allows you to model what an agency is looking for, be able to see it, be able to drive it, essentially, and then make changes as you see fit.
Well, that's one of the issues, too, that I've heard about when it comes to innovation is agencies, just because they're busy, they're doing a lot of things, are not always aware of all of the possibilities out there. They see a part of the horizon, but don't necessarily see the whole landscape. Is that do you see that too?
Definitely. I mean, they're just, it's very difficult for them. They're so busy, you know, and some of them still doing the manual
and
process.
And technology changes so
absolutely.
Quickly too.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. It's just a speed of light. I mean, it's just very, very quick right now.
Chris Kahlo is president and founder of and CEO of MicroPact, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More of our conversation on In Depth with Francis Rose in just a moment. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. Chris Kahlo is founder, president, and CEO of MicroPact, my guest on Industry Chatter today. One of the things that agencies are trying to deal with is bring your own device, the BYOD phenomenon. And this is something that is, I think, unique in government IT history in that it's driven entirely, it seems to me, by the employees. This can't have been an idea in an IT shop at an agency, I wouldn't think, Chris.
No, definitely. No, I mean, it's difficult, of course, as a consumer to have so many different devices, especially when you have to work. You've got 2 or 3 devices you're carrying around. So definitely, I think this is definitely being driven by the employee.
And that's, if I recall correctly, this is the first time that that's happened. Typically, the government or the organization, and it's not just the government, but the enterprise drives innovations and new points of evolution in IT adoption. And this is the first one in my memory that has been the employees coming in and saying, hey, I want to do this that I do at home. Here. Is that right. Fair to say, do you think?
It is, and I agree with that. I mean, and it's to me, it's just kind of like the Wild Wild West. I mean, you can't really allow people to go out there freely to just buy any device they want. I mean, there's just so many varieties of devices out there. You know, you got the iPhones, Blackberries, the Androids, and you've got different variations of all those things. And some phones potentially might be jailbroken. It's very difficult to be able to allow employees just to make those types of decisions. You know, there needs to be some sort of standardization in order for you to be able to collaborate more effectively. You know, it's just impossible for an enterprise to be able to support every single device that's out there.
Is it sufficient to standardize the pipe, though, that the employee uses with whatever device they have? Because that seems to be the approach that most agencies are going to try to take.
I think it's going to be difficult. Even, you know, I think you might be able to get some of that through the pipe. But at the end of the day, things are stored on that device, on your phone, on your iPad. So you're going to have the ability to wipe those types of things out. There's challenges, of course, associated with that.
And my fear is that the first time that one of those gets stolen and it's got X thousand pieces of personally identifiable information, here we go again with the same kinds of things that we've seen in the past. And the idea of trying to mitigate risk and the idea of bring your own device seem to be tremendously at odds with each other.
That's definitely true. And I think at the end of the day, what we're going to find, instead of, you know, cost savings for something like this, it's just going to cost the federal government a ton of money. I mean, the infrastructure is not in place. I don't think that all the details have been worked out to be able to have this type of initiative, on the forefront right now.
What infrastructure is lacking at agencies now to be able to execute this right?
Well, I think just being able to manage those mobile devices remotely is still a very much a big challenge. Having data on those devices is a big deal. Like to your point, I mean, if somebody were to take one of those devices that contain phone numbers or addresses of U.S. citizens or even employees of a federal agency, that's disastrous. So, you know, I think this needs to be thought out a little bit more before this thing becomes reality.
What are the steps that you think the agency should be looking at in order to go through that thought process to decide, okay, this is what we really need to do?
Well, I think they really need to figure out, you know, to standardize some of the devices that they're looking at issuing or potentially allowing people to buy. I think there should be a limit to that. They shouldn't allow everyone to buy whatever device that they want. I think they need to take a look at the pipe. To your point, how is security going to work with all these devices all over the place and all this data contained on these devices? So I think those are definitely the areas that they need to start focusing on before they even take that next step.
When Vivek Kundra first proposed the bring your own device idea, my thought was, well, maybe they'll come out with a hot list of, here are the Android devices that will allow you to bring onto the network, here are the BlackBerry devices, and so on. And somebody who I know who's worked in government IT, who I respect very much, said that will never work because technology changes too fast. Phone company provider X brings out a new Android device. It seems like every 20 minutes there's something that's, this one's 4G and this one does this or that or the other thing. And you're always going to have a quantity of people who are going to say, well, I want to use this one. That it's a Pandora's box, and once you open it, you're opening it for anything or just a lot of discontent. Is that reasonable, do you think? Do you think the hot list idea will work if it's managed the right way?
I think if it's managed the right way and really allowing and giving people the best of breed, allowing them to choose from the best of breed, what people are normally used to using. I think that can be successful. I think if you sort of, you start using obscure operating systems or providers that don't really have the best network, then I think you'll see people straying away from that, and it probably won't work out.
One example that I've seen is the Department of Veterans Affairs. Roger Baker has said they have people on their network using BlackBerries, they have people on their network using iOS, and they have people on their network using Android. And they're in the process of securing it. Their chief information security officer, Jerry Davis, I've mentioned a couple of times, is the first person that I heard. I won't say give him full credit, but he's the first person that I heard talk about the idea of securing the data rather than the device. That was when he was at NASA. What potential drawbacks exist there, as we were talking about the idea of securing the pipe, to your point about the infrastructure situation?
Sure. Securing the data is not an easy task. I mean, there are just so many forms of data out there today. To be able to secure that 100%, even today with just laptops, we're hearing things, security breaches when it comes to that. So we don't even have that basic security in place for things like laptops. How can we have security in place for mobile devices, which is very brand new, in this environment? I think there definitely still needs to be work put in on that.
As agencies try to get a handle around this, and we see the technology is moving faster, we're already hearing about an iPhone 5. The operating system is supposed to be dramatically different than what people are using in the iPhones that are on government networks now. A potential new iPad and so on, and a million different permutations, flavors of Android. Will there be somebody, maybe the chief technology officer, or maybe somebody else, whose role it becomes to be the vetter of all of these inside a federal agency?
I think that's the only way it's going to work, Francis. I think there's got to be somebody, overseeing this type of initiative. Like I said, go back to the Wild Wild West. It just doesn't work if you don't have, you don't have the guardrails in place for federal employees. It'll be just very difficult to be able to manage it.
And I wonder about the practicality of having however many 14 or 16 cabinet level vetting offices, or whether this is something that could be done at a different level so that we don't have everybody trying to duplicate the same kinds of work.
Definitely. I think having that centralized, from potentially the federal CIO overseeing that type of initiative and making it standard across the federal government, that may make the most sense.
Chris Collos, the founder, president, and CEO of MicroPact, my guest on Industry Chatter. The 25-point plan was one way that the chief information officer's office tried to do a little standardization. We're a little past a year out from that, and we'll talk about that and the impact that it's had on the contracting side when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Industry Chatter today with Chris Collo, founder, president, and CEO of MicroPact. And we talked about the 25-point plan. It's a little bit over a year old, and it has kind of faded away a little bit. We haven't heard as much about it lately. In hindsight, has the 25-point plan had an impact on how you interact with agencies, what they ask you for, and just in general how you do business with the federal government?
Yeah, whenever there's a plan that comes out from the federal government, everybody is on point trying to get it done. They're very excited about it. Everyone's, motivated to make it happen, So certainly we when the 25-point plan came out, everyone was excited. Unfortunately, I'm not hearing a lot of chatter about it anymore. And the question is it being implemented throughout the federal government right now? Is that excitement still there? Or is everyone focused on the budget pressures that's happening? And I think that's what I'm feeling right now. Everyone just so focused on the budget pressures.
The budget pressures are driving people to make decisions differently. How are they making decisions differently than throughout the time that you've been selling to the government?
Sure. The biggest difference I'm seeing and what we've been hearing from agencies is that they want to get these projects kicked off this year because they're just unsure of what's going to happen in the future. They're not sure what 2013 brings. They're not sure what 2014 brings. The nice thing is we got that continuing resolution passed for 6 months, which is a refreshing relief, but it's only 6 months. So, we're seeing some changes that are happening in the federal government because of the budget pressures. But they're concentrating on many different aspects of that.
Are agencies, do you think, able to kind of work on two tracks, one track being the budget pressures and the other track being the initiatives and requirements and so on that they have to do at the same time? I mean, what does that do to efficiency? Can agencies still continue to try to be efficient while meeting mandates and also dealing with budgets the way they are?
Sure. I think they have to, Francis. I think if they don't, you know, it's catastrophic in terms of their ability to complete their mission of their agency. It's important for them to take a look at the best of breed in terms of technology, in terms of best practices. Take a look at what other agencies are doing and what they have done in the past. And we're seeing a lot of that. A lot of our customers are customers that we've implemented, for instance, maybe an Inspector General case management system. So we've done it for one agency. So then another agency calls and says, hey, I heard you've done this for so-and-so. Can we take a look at that? And so that's the changes we're seeing now. They're no longer are they asking to reinvent the wheel over and over again to put their sort of flavor into it. They're talking to us and saying, what have you implemented? Because we've heard some great things, and then we show them pretty much 80% of their solution is there. They've got that 20%, of course, that they want to tweak a little bit. But that's what BPM is so solid.
Another change that I'm seeing is it seems to me, and this is, I think, a very positive change. Agencies that are working on IT projects don't think about them as much as IT projects anymore. It seems to me that you mentioned mission, and they're just thinking about them as additional mission components. And the idea is not to get a certain business process management system in place. It's to help us more efficiently do whatever that thing is going to do. That's a big mindset change. That's a big culture change. Do you see that
yeah,
a lot?
Certainly. We're seeing a shift in the thinking. Certainly the mission is becoming much more critical because they're not getting the budgets that they require to be able to do all these other activities. You know, the agencies are really investing in areas where, you know, a reduction in paperwork or reduction in processes, so that way they can be much more efficient. And that's where we're seeing the concentration of our contracts come in.
It is fascinating to me. You mentioned earlier that there are still agencies out there doing stuff manually and doing stuff with a patchwork, a crazy quilt of all kinds of legacy systems. When we come back from the break, I want to ask you, Chris, about that process, dig into it a little bit deeper. You touched on it earlier, but I want to really try to sift through that process of combining information that's coming in from a variety of places. Chris Kahlo is my guest. He is the founder, president, and chief executive officer of MicroPact, my guest today on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Years of debate and compromise on a cybersecurity bill in the Senate are close to culmination. Jim Lewis of the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The information sharing parts of the Senate bill and the bill in the House, CISPA, are very close. And if all they had to do was conference those two, this wouldn't be that hard. It's all the other stuff that's going to create problems.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Chris Kahlo is founder, president, chief executive officer of MicroPact, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked in the first segment, Chris, about the idea of you coming into an agency and you see an agency that's got who knows how many different systems that are producing information, and they want you to harness that information and drive it into one new system to be able to use that information. I want you to kind of walk me through that process, and then I also want you to take me beyond the implementation of your system. Once I have it, what I'm able to do with that new mass of data, because big data is one of the buzzwords that we're going to be hearing a lot more about, already are, but I think that's one of the ones for 2012 and beyond. So let's start at the beginning. I haven't done anything yet. I'm using 80 different systems, maybe. I had a lady from the Army on yesterday talking about the fact that they've consolidated over 100 legacy systems in a financial management situation. I know you can't speak to her directly, but you've seen a ton of these, I imagine,
definitely.
Over the years in government, where somebody says, we've got all this data coming in, none of it's the same as far as how it's standardized or any of that. Where does that process start, maybe even before somebody talks to you?
Sure. The analysis starts right from the beginning in terms of the data. What type of data is being collected? And how can we standardize that data to make it so that it'll fit into a platform of sorts? So So that's where it really begins, to taking a look at the data and the commonalities between those.
And when you look at the data, are there horror stories about data that you find that is either so technologically backward or so old or whatever that it's maybe not salvageable or not translatable? I don't know what the technical terms are, sure. But where it's really problematic to try to get it into a format that you can put it into something that you can work with?
Absolutely. There are so many systems still prevalent out there in the federal government that is so old. And that data that's just contained in there because there were not those checks and balances with those data systems. You have garbage in, garbage out type of terminology there. So, I mean, it's definitely difficult when data is not good because the reporting and the information that you get out of it is only as good as the data you put in.
What are the tools that an agency can use to detect to make sure that the data that they have is clean? Because you use the classic term garbage in, garbage out. If the data that I have is not reliable, I'm obviously not going to get results that are reliable.
Yes, and that's where the data systems come in, and that's where maybe business process management software comes in, is where you can put those checks and balances. You have to make sure there are constraints of what type of data gets put into the system to ensure that it's consistent throughout the agency, so that way you can share and collaborate with this information with your colleagues across the nation.
I think people are amazed when they get into this situation at how effective just having a bunch of eyeballs on data sets like this can be.
Yeah, I mean, the reports, executive management, at the end of the day, they're looking for statistics. They're looking for data that will allow them to make decisions, the right decisions. So, it's very, very important to have those eyeballs on there.
So I've got a handle then, going through this process, on all the types of data that are coming in, and I have a strategy in place to try to be able to standardize that data. You and I are working together on this project, Chris. What's the next step? Is this where I start to look specifically at how I'm going to corral that data and how I'm going to process it? Is that what comes next?
Exactly, yes. You take a look at that data. Okay, so you have it now. You've put it into a nice format that's really working together. And then next is that process. Taking a look at that process, what areas of it are manual, if there's still manual process there, and seeing what areas you could automate.
And then the automation process is where I imagine you really start to see a value add in the process that you've gone through. When you start to see the automation process, what does that look like? What do you do when you are seeing the automation process take hold that you weren't able to do before? What kind of power do you have now that you didn't have before?
Well, first off, it's definitely that collaboration. Being able to work with, any of your colleagues, it doesn't matter where they're at, whether they're at home, whether they're in a totally different state. That's the power of it. You're able to focus more on the important aspects of your job. You're not worrying about the manual processes that you normally have to do. You're able to actually do what's important, what you were hired to do. You weren't hired to do data entry or put this information in manually. Since 9/11, I mean, the collaboration and sharing of information just becomes very, very important. And I think we're definitely seeing agencies move in that direction.
So when you have the automation process going, does that give you a higher capability to analyze the information that is going through the system? I would think so.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, to be able to get that data in a central location, to be able to slice and dice that data, and to make sense of it is definitely one huge benefit of that and what executives are always looking for.
So is the big data challenge that agencies are dealing with the fact that we have the ability now to collect all this data that we didn't have before thanks to processes like yours, but now that we have it all, what do we do with it? Is that what the agencies are trying to figure out? Is that the big data nut that everybody's trying to crack?
It is. It's the analytics portion of it as well. I mean, being able to see, okay, I have this set of data. How should I slice this? What is it, and how can I slice it to make sense of it? That's that next challenge.
How much of that is a technology problem, and how much of that is just a brain power analysis problem? Because it sounds to me like it's the same idea as we talked about earlier in the acquisition and procurement process, where agencies may only see part of the landscape. I imagine it takes some pretty broad thinkers to be able to think of all the possible wild applications of this that we might be able to use. Here we have all these things, and how do we shape it and need it to bring out what we want?
Yes, absolutely. The expertise is needed in all the different types of data that's being collected. It's not just one individual. You really need to have a group of people being able to take a look at that data, and then how are you going to use that data, you know, to make these informed decisions.
What kind of a person is well suited to that? What kind of a thinker, what kind of an experience portfolio does that person have, that kind of thing?
Well, definitely have to have an analytical mind. I mean, the person's got to be able to look at data and really connect the dots for agencies. Because the data is so diverse and there's so much data. You know, I think I saw a study in terms of from IDC that's saying that data is being created around the world and that it more than doubles every 2 years. That's a significant amount of data that's being consumed right now.
Is there a process in place to automate the prioritization of data, or is that still pretty subjective? And what I mean by prioritization is, I imagine with just the sheer quantity that agencies have access to, how do you make sure that you're looking at the most important stuff and paying attention to the most important stuff to find the slices that are most relevant to how you want to meet your mission? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does make sense. I think it's up to that executive. I mean, what is the mission of the particular agency? You know, if you're EPA, I mean, are the levels of particular carcinogens or whatever, are they within the legal limits and such? It takes a specialized individual to be able to make those types of determinations.
Is it all that straightforward, though? I imagine there are a lot of nuances in some of these data sets that are maybe could be pretty esoteric.
Absolutely, it's very complex. I mean, there's just such a wide variety of it. It's very, very complex.
We've walked through this process somewhat of the. Of the processes that you've had experience doing this with, what have been some of the challenges and some of the mileposts that we've talked about that agencies get stuck on sometimes?
The challenges that agencies normally have when taking a look at how to do these automations is really, what piece of data it has to run through this particular process, and what steps are needed to automate this and make it more efficient. That's definitely the key areas there that are big problems for the federal government.
One of the things that we talked about before we went on the air was the idea that technology people in government are so focused on transitions like the ones that you and I have talked about and budget challenges like the ones that you and I have talked about that they don't have as much time as they would like to think in kind of a visionary way. And so when we come back for the last segment, Chris, I'd like to get your thoughts on things that maybe should be on the minds of technology people in government and leaders in government in general, since technology is such a huge piece of what the government does now. For, say, the 2 to 5 years out time frame, maybe things that agency leaders don't have a chance to necessarily dig into right now, but should at least be thinking about or be able to say 6 months or a year from now, I've heard of that and I know it's out there. We'll do that to wrap up our conversation when we come back with Chris Kahlo. He's founder, president, and CEO of MicroPact, my guest for Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter on In Depth with Francis Rose. My guest today is Chris Kahlo. He's founder and president and CEO of MicroPact. And Chris, we've talked a lot about the past and the present. And one of the things that I hear from IT leaders and leaders of all stripes in government is, I'm so focused on what's happening now and in the foreseeable future that I don't have much time to think conceptually, to think visually, in a kind of a visionary way. So I want to ask you, if you're talking to one of your counterparts in government and they're asking you, what do you see on the horizon in the 2 to 5 year timeline, say? What's the next thing that I should be preparing for and that people in my organization and that I should be educating myself about?
Sure. The thing is, you know, with our BPM software, you know, we're collecting all this data. We're running it through a business process. So the next question is, what are you going to do with that data? Big data is here. It's up and coming. It's major, obviously, and we're seeing certain adoption of that in the federal space. The next thing that goes along with that, and where I think the next big thing is going to be, is the analytics portion. What is that data going to tell us,
mm-hmm.
and how are we going to sort of slice that to make sure that it's helping us move our mission forward? I foresee one day maybe there's some sort of algorithm, some magic algorithm somebody comes up with, so that way it's not really humans that are you know, shaping these analytics, and we're really using the data that we're capturing to be able to automate that feature.
And I'm sure you hope that it's somebody at MicroPact that comes up with that algorithm.
Absolutely. We're working very hard to do it.
The timeline for this, I mean, the big data problem seems to me to be that very thing, which is, okay, now I have all this stuff. Data's all clean. I'm comfortable with its reliability. And how do I make use of all of this? Because, and that's kind of why I went to the prioritization point earlier, which is in the future, I can only imagine that we'll continue to grow the capability to assemble the information for companies like you to be able to present it to agencies through products like what you have. So the idea then of the continuing volume strikes me as the challenge on the horizon. Do you think that at some point in the future that will be an education situation in addition to a potential software solution where we'll start to see best practices codified for big data analysis, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think there's certainly going to be an education. People are going to have to make those decisions. I mean, I think automation gets you to a certain point, but at the end of the day, us human beings are going to have to make those decisions. And you know, maybe one day computers will get there. I don't know that we're quite there yet, but we'll certainly get there.
If you and I sit down, say, 5 years from now to have this same conversation, how do you think the role of the person involved in this data analysis equation will be the same, and how do you think it'll be different?
Well, I think 5 years from now, and, you know, with how technology is moving so quickly, I think someone's going to solve the problem. So in terms of what we as humans are going to be able to do, I think it's really, taking a look at the information that's presented to us and then making and moving that mission forward.